wanted to talk a little bit about the commercial sector to start off with. We've seen a lot of stuff in the press about how the commercial sector is facing a lot of pricing pressure, particularly around the Asia-Pacific region, a lot of competition. We've seen the number of geostationary comm satellites decline over the last couple of years. Used to be a run rate of 20 to 24 a year for commercial geos. Last couple of years we're down 8 or lower. What's happening? Is it because of the threat of high-throughput satellites, the type that Cole talked about, that Viasat's building? Is it the non-GSOs constellations as a threat? Is it price? Is it demand? Where are we going on the commercial front, regionally and more specifically in Australia? So perhaps look to one of the operators to pick that up. Perhaps the Australian operator might want to start off.
As a regional operator, the backbone of your business is your broadcast and transponder. Yeah. If you look globally, a lot of the satellite operators are under pressure. The pay TV operators are under pressure, obviously from the likes of Netflix and OTT. I'd like to think we're a bit insulated from that, but we're not. I mean, I think just before Christmas, there was a press release that we re-signed Sky TV New Zealand, and that's for the same amount of capacity with options on more. So there's still growth in broadcast for HD. And as you know, we've got a 4K brilliant sports channel. I encourage you to get an IQ4 box and start watching the cricket, especially the Ashes. I think you can gather who I'm supporting. On the data side, is a slightly different. It's definitely more competitive. We provide Virgin Airline with IFC connectivity, so you can't get away from your email. And our friends from Viasat provide Qantas, so there's a healthy competition there. I think the game changer from a data perspective, because we're going to have to try and grow our data business so that we're not so reliant on the broadcast business, is the new VHTS type satellites with software defined capability, where we have a element of flexibility of how we can configure and shape those beams so that when the market changes, we can change with the market. What we're also seeing with different manufacturing techniques and different launch providers, and the insurance market at the moment is very, very competitive, is that we're seeing a much more cost-effective spacecraft and launch vehicles. So if we can drive that cost per bit down below a certain rate, I think that will actually open up new markets for geo-type satellites.
I think that's been one of the hardest things, is that we've made it difficult for folks to access satellite from a technical perspective and from a pricing point against terrestrial options, if those options exist. So it's a good point on the cost per bit that we're serving to users. Cole, did you want to jump in?
I was just going to make a couple of comments. Firstly, I think there's no doubt bandwidth economics are going to really stress the market as the HTS satellites come through. There's no doubt that that's going to cause a big change. But I think we need to be more innovative about how we do it. Viasat is currently in Mexico providing internet services for about $1 a month to lots of people, and we can afford to do that because we take a community Wi-Fi approach. So we put one small station in a village in Mexico. There's generally about 250 to 500 people who are within the range of that Wi-Fi bubble, and we can provide quite good access. Interestingly, a lot of the people we're servicing are quite poor, but the number of people who have smartphones is up near 80 or 90%, even in rural Mexico. So I think that's a good model. We can get Wi-Fi to a lot of people, a little bit like you guys with the O3B, the other 3 billion people. So we're certainly pushing ahead with that. And I think the final thing I'd say is that there's a big analogy between terrestrial communications and where satellites going. I think terrestrial communications in the early days really was about broadcast. People would broadcast TV and things like that. And as time has gone on, people have gone through cell phones, individual interactive services, and now applications on platforms where people are not really paying for the platform. They're paying for the applications that are on there. I think the same analogy is happening in space now. We're definitely moving away from the broadcast space, finding innovative ways to get the bandwidth economics to a state where people want to be mobile and just connect. They don't care how it happens. They don't want to see the satellite services that are being provided. They just want to connect. We see it already in the aircraft industry, and that's certainly changing significantly, and I think that will continue to go on. And again, that's a common theme with the connectivity at the network layer for satellites. I think that's where it's going to go.
Great, thanks. Ashton, I want to bring you in as the end user representative here on the panel. You have a lot of end user customers. Does this resonate with what you're hearing from your customers?
Absolutely. So I think what Cole mentioned before about moving from a satellite to a services company is very appropriate. We're on the same track. So we're moving from an internet provider to an information provider. So we're seeing our customers saying, we don't care what type of communications you give us, we just want to be connected. And we also want particular type of information delivered to us in a certain way. So I think it's incumbent on us as an industry to grow up and listen to our customers and understand how they're consuming the services that we provide and make sure that we can get a little bit closer to the customer to deliver a personalised experience to our customers. Otherwise, we end up just being an internet service provider, and you're right, we just compete on price, and that's a commodity, and that's not good. That's a race to the bottom. Correct.
Okay, thanks. Glenn, I know you and Boeing are busy building the MPower constellation. Is that going to impact
things? There's a good reason for it. I mean, so the reason SES was stood up was for broadcast television. And so when you build a satellite, it's going to last for 15 years. It's about half full when you put it up there and you put the broadcasters on. So what do you do with these empty transponders that are sitting around? You rent them out short-term to data providers. And that model's ticked along quite well for 20-odd years. We're now at the point now that the price that customers are willing to pay for a megabit delivered is much lower than it was. And so you really need a differentiated infrastructure to deliver those cheaper megabits. So what I foresee is that predominantly the geo belt will be full of broadcasting satellites because it's still the cheapest way to distribute lots of good content. I mean, CDN costs are not zero. If you've got a million customers you need to deliver English Premier League to, satellite is still the best way to do it. CDN costs are not zero on the ground. It's still a very significant cost factor. So we expect to see a move towards differentiated infrastructure, and whether that's HTS or VHTS, as Viasat has, or a MEO or a LEO constellation. And it's just economics driving it there, that's all.
So the days of the $3 million per year transponders are gone, is that what you're telling me?
I would say every market is different.
Okay. Yeah. In terms of the technology in MPower, could you perhaps, Mike, you want to touch base on where you're going with MPower and there's thousands of spot beams, inter-satellite links. Can you talk a little bit about where that's gone? I know Nick talked about the reconfigurability desire. Obviously, that's constantly reconfiguring itself.
So I don't want to get in front of our customer and describing the technology in the MPower satellites. It's truly revolutionary, and I think there was some discussion earlier about some of the characteristics of kind of these next-generation ultra-high-throughput satellites. I think the ability to have a truly digital software-defined payload that can be reconfigured will extend the life of the satellite and extend the period before it becomes obsolete. And also, I think some of the technologies on MPower that have been discussed publicly, like the 5,000 simultaneous agile beams that this satellite can produce, are truly revolutionary. Just from a technology standpoint, I spent a lot of my career working on payloads and especially phased array antennas. And most of the phased arrays I've developed in the past for satellites have maybe done just a few number of beams. The ability to do 5,000 simultaneous beams is truly revolutionary. If you look at the nadir face of that satellite, there's just two arrays, a transmit and receive array. So you're forming 5,000 beams from those arrays. So that's just some of the things that SES has kind of disclosed publicly about it. I allow them to take the lead in discussing other features that are revolutionary about that satellite.
Thomas, I know Airbus has done a lot of work in this area and also on the electric propulsion front as well. Could you talk a little bit about how you see things evolving going forward?
Yeah. So first, before maybe going on the EOR, definitely the pressure on the price and the cost also of the whole satellite system or space system is going to the ground, is moving to the ground. So the only way for satellite to remain relevant in this business is to manage economies of scales. And then we have only two ways to do that. The first way is to have bigger beasts in order to have a cheaper price for the megabit in orbit, or to have more flexible satellites and to have universal satellites like the OneSat that we are developing now, that is basically helping to work on the industrial model where you have more standard satellite and then you adjust it from the ground, as it has been described by the other panelists. So there are basically these two ways. The electric orbit raising is also linking to that point because, as you probably all know, 40% of the satellite mass is propellant in the chemical way of thinking. So as the launch cost is also driven by mass, you can imagine how much capacity you keep for the payload if you keep the same spacecraft mass, having 500 kilograms of propellant rather than having 2 or 2.5 tons of propellant. So it's another way to do it. We are delivering more and more electric orbit raising satellites. The only difference with the chemical is, of course, the time to get in geo orbit, where it takes a few months, so 3 to 5 months, depending on the size of the spacecraft. And it has to fit and to be adjusted with the constraint of the business case or the operator, driven by IT rules, frequency elements, driven also by the existing business case that have to be delivered. But it's definitely one of the big trends. I think on the 11 spacecraft that has been ordered last year, that is a pretty small number. Yeah. Three of them are electric orbit raising, and actually on Airbus side, we are having more and more of these spacecrafts.
Yeah, people are seeing the benefits of put the launch mass towards payload rather than fuel, and make some more money out of the satellite.
Indeed, or the other way around is for a given mission, then you are far lighter. And your launch cost is also decreasing.
Correct, yeah.
Decreasing, so.